All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, March 9th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is 31 degrees with light snow, fog, and overcast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Nanotech in Food, George Bush, FDA, National Institute of Health, Willy Wonka, and No Labels. And we looked at some pretty disturbing things, how back from the reign of George Bush, he had been responsible for passing a Nanotechnology Research and Development Act that provided millions, if not billions of dollars for a 4 or 5 year period to try to commercialize nanotechnology in the United States, of course, for economic growth. You know, throw all the health concerns out a window, though we did find that even though the FDA had no idea how much nanotechnology was in our food, the National Institute of Health actually did us a solid and came out with a study that talked about some of the dangers that they had been discovering with nanotechnology in the body and a lot of the unknowns, because a lot of this technology had not been researched long-term on humans. Now, just like we discovered the cloned meat, the USDA and the FDA back in 2006, I think 2008, again under the Bush regime, was approved and nobody was really watching how much was on the market, nor did they have to label it. They did the exact same thing with nanotechnology in our food. And we read on Wednesday about how the FDA gives recommendations, yet there were no laws to, actually they gave guidance is what they did, but there were no laws for them to adhere to. We ended the show with a story from a publication on a domain called organicfoodie.com. And this author, which I don't see a name on here, which I hate when they do that because I like to try to give credit. This author attended a nanotechnology conference in like Denmark or Amsterdam back in 2006. It was very disturbing just thinking back as to how many years ago that was. I mean, that's 12 years, and we know that this technology moves exponentially. And over 12 years is pretty incredible to see where we've come in some of these other disruptive technologies. So it's really got to make you wonder where they are at by 2018. So Willy Wonka in the title came from the beginning of the story talking about Willy Wonka's magic chewing gum, where you can get a 3 or 4 course meal out of a piece of gum just from the flavors changing and changing in the correct order. Well, they're actually working on stuff like that, we find out. There are a lot of the big boys were at this event, and they really didn't want to be on record as being there, because one of the things that seems to be going on is that a lot of the companies in the industry, because their own scientists are making these discoveries and then rubber stamping them as chemically equivalent, have patents on these technologies, and of course they don't want it to get out, so they're keeping it all pretty secret. Anybody who could have the best tasting, most nutraceutical food is going to win. Says the food people included at this event: Unilever, Kraft, Cadbury, Schweppes, Tate & Lyle, and GlaxoSmithKline. They are also looking at using these technologies for edible drugs and that type of thing. And they were very shy and entirely off the record if they spoke at all. I was having a friendly chat with a research scientist from Numico, which is the European baby food giant, till he found out I was a journalist and then refused to tell me his real name and asked me to erase the word Numico from my notebook. I thought he was going to snatch it away. It's obvious they were all edgy, and consumers are not ready for nano food. And I would say still, 12 years later, we're not, even though we don't know about it yet. And it's all going to be for our own good, because Kurzweil wants to cure death as a disease. And among some scientists in the field, there's a real sense that nanotechnology, and food at least, is a revolution that may die in its cradle. Or if they do it real quietly, you won't know about it, and then it will be a large industry. And it'll be rejected by a public that has lost its Trust in scientists and its patience with industries that are profit-driven, fooling with the food that we eat and our environment and everything else. At the conference, the media was blamed, of course, for the bad public opinion. And as being the only journalist there, I had some eggs thrown at me, and ignorant, sensationalist journalism was holding back nanotechnology progress, fueling the public's irrational reactions to novel food processes. But Lynn Frewer, a professor of food safety and consumer behavior at Wageningen University, a leading center of nanotech research in the Netherlands, calls the scientists to order, and it was the public's irrational fears that needed to be addressed, she said. Quote, it is human nature, an involuntary risk, however remote, concerns people far more than one over which they have a choice, and they know the evil. And that is why the public finds gene technology more threatening than eating a fatty, unhealthy burger. And think about this one. You know, there's that whole thing about informed consent, and I truly believe in that. You know, if I made the choice to eat nanotechnology, that would be one thing. But if it was being snuck into my food, I think I've mentioned this a long time ago on the show, I've always had a thing about food. I don't like my food being messed with, and I really think that goes back to when I was a kid, and my mother would cook dinner, and we'd sit down at the table, and we'd eat it, and then probably 10 minutes into dinner, she'd say, do you like it? And we'd be like, yeah, it's good. And she'd say, I put, sardines in there, ha ha ha, and she'd laugh evilly. But she'd always trick us by trying to put, and I don't know, it wasn't sardines, but trying to put something nutritious or whatever in the food and not tell us, and then trick us to eat it and then come after the fact and laugh and tell us that she put it in there. And I swear to God, that's the same feeling that I get when I read about this stuff and about them putting all kinds of crazy stuff in and on our food. I feel like that, but even at a worse level, because it's not my mother, who I trust, is lunatics running this mad science gone mad petri dish world that we have. It's sneaking stuff in to see what's going to happen. You know, and I think back to like all kinds of different interviews that I've heard with Kurzweil or seen with Kurzweil, where he starts right off the bat, like years and years ago, talking about nanobots in your blood and how they're going to cure you and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, let's go back to those days. That was when this stuff still sounded like the ravings and rantings of lunatics. You know, like when you guys first started hearing this show, we started talking about some of this stuff, and everyone thought I was kind of nuts. Well, Kurzweil has always been the crazy uncle in the corner to me. And I, at that time, even thought he was nuts. But it's not so nuts anymore. And maybe he knew stuff that we didn't quite know at the time. So anyway, let's get back to this. Dr. David Bennett, a veteran biochemist now working at the European Commission Project on the Ethics of Nanotechnology, felt the prospect was bleak. He felt the public rejection of nanotechnology was almost certain, and he says very little risk assessment has been done in this area, and even some products that are already entering the market, and it is an open question whether it'll be done. So maybe in 2006, they were still trying to decide whether or not they were going to let it go into the food supply and not say anything or not. And what is to be afraid of from a technology that offers so much, such as healthier food, fewer, better targeted chemicals, less waste, smart, and thus less packaging, and even the promise of a technological solution to a problem of the 1 billion people who don't get enough to eat? Amid the papers on the issues such as application of nanofiltration for demineralization of a toward acid whey, which will boost the yield in ice cream and yogurt production, one much-discussed question in Amsterdam was how government should regulate the arrival of nano in the household. There are no new rules in Europe, and some voices, including the man from Unilever's research labs, who dismissed the need for any type of regulation. Nanotech is natural, he insisted. It uses no new substances, just the same ones smaller, but other scientists in the field disagree. And this is where the problem lies. Matter has different behaviors at the nanoscale, says Dr. Chris Ejikel from Dutch Twente University. It means that different risks are associated with it. We do not know what the risks are, and the current regulations on the introduction of new food processes do not take that into account. Aluminum, for example, is stable in the big world, and that's that macro world, but it is explosive at the nano levels. I didn't know that. That's pretty crazy. Poof! Some of the carbon nanostructures that are being used in electronics have been shown to be highly toxic if released into the environment, and some metals will kill bacteria at a nanoscale, hence the interest in using them in food packaging. But what will happen if they get off the packaging and into us? Well, nobody seems to know. So there's another common thread we see. No one knows how much is in our food, and no one seems to know what the consequences will be. But as a significant risk, a body as the UK's Royal Society has expressed worries over the lack of research into health implications of free nanoparticles being introduced into the environment. The size question is central to some of these concerns. Nanoparticles are under 100 nanometers wide, and that is less than the size of a virus and has unique abilities. They can cross the body's natural barriers, like the blood-brain barriers and the gut barrier, entering into cells through the liver, into the bloodstream, even through the cell wall surrounding the brain. So that's how Kurzweil said we're going to have nano whatever in our blood. And I was just reading, it's not just about nanobots, but even these little mini nano sensors that can bag tag and track everything that's going on inside of you. I'd like to drink a glass of water and know that the contents are going into my stomach and not into my lungs, says Dr. Qasim Chaudhry of the British government's Central Science Laboratory. We are giving very toxic chemicals the ability to cross cell membranes and to go where none have ever gone before. But where will they end up? Well, it's been shown that free nanoparticles inhaled go straight to the brain, and there are lots of concerns, yeah, especially if they've been aerosolized. We have to ask, do the benefits outweigh the risks? Well, maybe you guys should have asked that long before you released all this craziness. Asbestos is a good analogy that everyone has come up with. 6 years ago, the stable, cheap building material helped war-devastated Europe put up housing quickly, and even in the United States, until it was discovered that asbestos has microfibers, and once those microfibers are free, they cause hideous and lethal damage to the lungs. Dr. Chaudhry has been leading a team of researchers reporting to the government's Food Standards Agency on nanotechnology and safety, and he is worried that health research is way behind the technology and that a whole range of tests has not been carried out. For instance, on the nanocompounds already being tested for water cleaning in the third world countries, Dr. Chaudhry's team has told the Department of Environment, of Food and Rural Affairs that it thought companies and researchers introducing nanoproducts should be obligated to notify authorities about them. Yeah, you'd think. The government agreed and launched a list scheme in September, but decided that, just like in the United States, notification to the government should be voluntary, not mandatory. And you and I can see the list. It will, out of respect to commercial interests, It will, out of respect to commercial interests, be kept secret. So, you know, try and find a list of companies that use nanotechnology in their food. This story is actually one of the first, and it was because she was the only journalist at this event and actually got to see who was there. As with genetic modification, Europe may be overtaken by events in the States. Europe may be overtaken by events in the States where food regulators have, under the Bush presidency, been steamrolled by a food industry eager to push the new technology. Monsanto, Syngenta, Dow, and et cetera. So far, however, the list of kitchen nanoproducts actually on American shelves is unimpressive. Well, that was 2006. And the Woodrow Wilson Center, which is a Washington research institute, runs a database of nanotech products that are commercially available. And the list under food and beverage is only about 29 products long, compared with 201 under the health and fitness But the list has grown 50% since March when it was only 19 products long. So I'll have to see if I can find that list. I did not look for it. Most of these products are self-cleaning and antibacterial food packaging items, cutting boards, and so on. And there are a couple of Samsung nano silverized refrigerators. There are also nutritional supplements under the well-established American brand of nanoceuticals. And there's a B12 vitamin spray marketed by Nutrition by Nanotech. And you can simply catch a child with an open mouth and spray the stuff straight in. Ah! And they'll absorb the nano-sized vitamins directly through their mucosal cells. It tastes like candy. Would you believe it? And they are asking for more, runs the copy line. Should give your kids more nanoized vitamins and see them grow another arm out of their forehead. One in three items on the Woodrow Wilson list are listed as food. One is nano tea from a Chinese company that will increase tenfold the amount of selenium absorbed from green tea through capsules engineered to bypass the stomach and dissolve in your lower gut. There's also canola activa oil, which is an Israeli invention that nano capsule delivered chemicals in rapeseed oil that will stop cholesterol from entering the bloodstream. And it is exciting technology utilizing nano's ability to suspend or dissolve any substance you like in oil or water. Finally, there is the Slim Shake Chocolate, which is a powdered drink that uses nanotechnology to cluster the cocoa cells and thus cut out the need for sugar. Yeah, I was reading too that a lot of the diet or low fat stuff also probably has some sort of nanotech in it. More importantly, what is the promise that nanotechnology offers and it hopes to the 1 billion habitually undernourished on the planet? Well, nothing yet. Dr. Donald Bruce, a chemist who heads up a group examining technology and ethics for the Church of Scotland, is doubtful. He sat on a committee 10 years ago examining the moral implications of introducing genetic modification, and the public were told that genetic modification is going to feed the world. And so we looked for evidence of any application that science had addressed the need of the poor subsistence farmer, and we couldn't find any. The industry went for ergonomic benefits and not for the people benefits. So with nanotech, the food industry has once again got it back to front again. He feels such innovation must be consumer led and the consumer must be able to see what is in it for them. So in other words, he thinks it's wrong that they are sneaking this stuff to us and not trying to get us to open our arms and embrace nanotechnology in our food because it's good for us. So now we're going to cover a story that I was surprised came out in 2011 out of PBS.org, which makes you think that this is an agenda that they really were trying to educate the public to say, hey, this stuff is not bad. Five things you need to know about nano foods. Nanotechnology is changing how we think about food, and more than just an exploration of new recipes, food science includes manipulating matter at the atomic level, changing the chemical compositions, and altering molecular structures. Yeah, that sounds safe to me. A report by Helmut Kaiser Consultancy says that by 2040, nanotechnology will be incorporated into every aspect of food production. Newly designed nanostructures are already being incorporated into our food, changing how the food tastes and gets absorbed into the body and stays fresh. It is a process more like architecture than cooking. And here's just a small sample of the shape of nanofoods to come. Number one, playing Lego with flavor. Ever wish the taste of a delicious food would linger? Well, molecular gastronomy, which is a great term, I think I'm going to use it in the title today, is a new area in which chefs collaborate with food scientists to make this kind of experience possible. Salvonia Technologies has created nano-encapsulated flavors, very like tiny gel caps, that adhere to the mouth and prolong the taste sensation. Scientists are just beginning to unlock the secrets of taste, and by creating nanoparticles that fasten onto taste receptors in the tongue, they can control how we experience individual flavors. Now, how crazy is that? It's Soylent Green. Yeah, but it tastes like chocolate or blueberries. By changing the chemical bonds that hold molecules and atoms together, tiny building blocks that can be assembled in ways to make it salt saltier, sweet sweeter. And companies are also reaching on-demand foods whose flavors or appearance could be altered on the spot to suit the eater. And we read about those on Wednesday. Thousands of nanoparticles contain different flavors and color enhancers that would be incorporated into food, and they would stay dormant unless specifically triggered. Oh, you want a purple velvet cake? Well, why not? How about a super spicy Vitellino? Well, coming right up. You know, here's the thing that's nuts about this. You know, nanotechnology, at least when my brain thinks of it right away, I always think of little metal things or little pieces of robots or something. But it's not just that. We are talking about nanotechnology actually refers to the physical size of the particle. So back in the very beginning, I think they were tinkering with carbon, which is the basis of all life on planet Earth, but they've gotten to the point where they can take all kinds of nutrients and all kinds of things across the, the atomic table? No, the, what's that table called? The periodic table. And they're able to nanoize all kinds of different chemicals, building blocks of life, to turn them into something new. And just like we read in the last story, that's one of the biggest concerns, that when these elements get reduced in size, their behavior is altered. So it's almost like we've exponentially increased our periodic table to all kinds of new crazy things that we'll be able to do. So let's get them into the human body and experiment. All right, number two, a new kind of nano layer cake. Castor oil is synonymous with unhappy faces, but encapsulating fish oil into tiny nanospheres means never having to taste it again. And that is how the Tip Top Bakeries in Australia has added omega-3 fatty acids to its bread. And, you know, I've seen a lot of that lately. Now with omega-3 fatty acids. That's another one of those eyebrow-raising moments. Scientists at the University of Massachusetts are devising layer cake-like structures in which nano layer contains a different nutrient. Oh, each nano layer contains different nutrients, vitamins, or antimicrobial agents encapsulated into thousands of tiny spheres. The individual nanosphere is designed to release when exposed to water or a change in your pH level, and the sphere's surfaces can even hold a bioadhesive designed to attach specific areas of the body, like your small intestine, for optimal absorption. Number three is titled RX Repasts. A new class of foods called nutraceuticals is being designed to treat illnesses like cancer, of course, and diabetes and heart disease. And scientists are developing new types of tiny structures, such as a matrix containing nanoparticles that would release substances like glucose in stages. They're also developing nanofoams, which would form coaxial tubes to deliver medications or other needed substances directly into the capillaries. What? So they're going to form coaxial tubes to deliver things such as medications directly into your capillaries. What? Now that's pretty transhumanist to me, though they don't say what kind of particles. So number four, when your food talks to your refrigerator, and that would be the ultimate Internet of Things. With nanosensors, sips of spoiled milk could become history. And when embedded in food containers, the nanosensors can monitor freshness by analyzing gases emitted by your food. An attachment litmus strip changes color to alert the consumer. And AZTI Technelia, who is a Spanish food research company, has already developed tags that monitor the freshness of fish to ship to the shopping cart. Taking that a step further, information received by sensors could be transmitted using tiny radio frequency devices. Again, Internet of Things. And while these devices are still about 10 years away from actual use, they could be incorporated directly into the packaging structure, making them cheaper and more efficient than silicon chips. Unlike barcodes, which have to be scanned, nanosensors could transmit real-time information about food directly to the processor, the grocer, or even to your smart refrigerator. Nanosensors could also provide a world of information to shoppers. A consumer could tell if a pear was sweet or tart, ripe or crisp, and organic food could be scanned for pesticides, and nanosensors could also analyze DNA. People could find out if the corn or wheat in their muffin was genetically modified. Wink! There's the big sell to all the people scared of this technology. Or extract the contents of that package of tuna. Tell you whether or not it's radioactive. Number five. Food that glows in the dark. Just what we need. And it's not sushi. Researchers have also been incorporating nanotechnology into food packaging as a high-tech means for keeping food fresh or alerting us to when it isn't. Kodak, for example, has developed an antimicrobial nanofilm, and when added to packages, the film absorbs oxygen and keeps the food fresh. Agromicron, a privately held biotech company, has also developed a spray designed to bind Salmonella or E. coli microbes to a protein surface. When bound, the proteins begin to glow, and the brighter the glow, the worse the contamination. Beer reacts badly to plastic bottles, but Miller Brewing has used a clay nanoparticle to create a shatterproof bottle that increases the beer's shelf life by 6 months. Having trouble getting that last bit of ketchup out of your bottle? Well, notice how slippery those ketchup bottles are. Researchers have developed a lining that is only 20 nanometers thick that prevents food from sticking. And last but not least, number six. This is the term that I've used so many times on this show. There is no free lunch. The prospects for better, smarter food seems dizzying. And there are reasons to be concerned about this widespread use of these small technologies. The impact of fortifying food with nanoparticles containing vitamins or other nutrients has not yet been thoroughly studied, says PBS.org, if you did not believe Organic Foodie. Nor is it regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. No, we went right to the horse's mouth and we found out they are only giving suggestions. Just like in physics, particles are different at the quantum level, and nanoparticles have an inverse relationship between the size and their surface. When a particle's diameter reaches the nanoscale, the surface area increases exponentially, so doses of medications or nutraceuticals become way more complex as the size decreases, and it also becomes way more unpredictable. Manufacturing nanomaterials released into the waste stream could pose a new range of environmental risks as well, and it is not known if nanomaterials will accumulate along the food chain, be taken up by plants, absorbed by animals, or into the groundwater. The use of radio frequency information devices and other nanosensors also raises privacy issues, right? Your carton of milk is spying on you, and if food purchases by the consumer are tracked, who controls that information? Google. And then they sell it to everybody. Environmental organizations like Friends of the Earth have mounted consumer rights and information campaigns, and Friends of the Earth warn that there is a potential for nanosensors to gather and track an individual's shopping habits, health profile, medications, and genetic makeup, and this information can then be sold to advertisers or whoever else wants it, like researchers. Ultimately, much of the research on nanofoods is conducted behind closed doors at large multinational food and beverage companies, just like we said, down long dark hallways, and their research is considered intellectual property, and it is not published nor peer-reviewed. At this point, any decisions about using these developments are made solely by the company and divulged at the company's discretion, which puts consumers and regulators at a big disadvantage when it comes to developing safeguards and even informed consent against these tiny developments. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. That was quite a sobering story. So then I found, just a year later, a publication, grist.org, put out an article titled "Nanoparticles in Your Food." Well, don't look twice because you're already eating them. Twite Greenaway, December 3rd, 2012. I, and then is Twite, have been keeping my eye on the role of nanotechnology in food for a few years now, so I was interested to see a feature-length investigation called Eating Nano in this month's E! Magazine. In it, E!'s editor Britta Belli takes a deep dive into the growing role of nanotech in food and agriculture, the current lack of oversight and regulation, and the growing consensus that more information and transparency are both sorely needed in relation to this growing field. Nanotech involves engineering and manipulation of particles at a nanoscale. Particles, as they are called, are measured in the nanometers or billionths of 1 meter. Another way to put it is if the nanoparticle were the size of a football, a red blood cell would be the size of the football field. And although some nanoparticles have been found to exist in nature, it is the nanoparticle that are engineered in the laboratory that can have environmental health advocates concerned. Here's the thing. It turns out most materials start behaving differently at the nano size, and according to British corporate accountability organization As You Sow, which has been keeping tabs on the nanotech industry for several years, materials reduced to the nanoscale, either through engineered or natural processes, can suddenly show very different properties compared to what they exhibit on a macro scale, enabling unique applications such as alterations in color, electrical conductance, or permeability. Considering the fact that nanoparticles are now used to help deliver nutrients, keep food fresh longer, or act as thickening or coloring agents in processed foods, these quote-unquote different properties might also be a concern, or at very best, they might be reason enough to conduct thorough research into their health impacts. Now, guys, how are we the unwitting, and I mean, we've seen this in so many different ways, but we are the unwitting global guinea pigs for this experiment that has no other precedent. I mean, there's precedent for experimentation on humans without their knowledge, but not precedent with nano-sized ingredients that have never been tested in an in vivo environment before. Now, a story we covered a couple shows ago looked at how they were using nanoparticles and somehow encapsulating CRISPR to deliver it into the body to be able to manipulate neurons, I believe, and genetically modify on the fly. All right, back to the story. In actuality, companies are not required to disclose nano-sized ingredients, nor is there much active questioning about their safety. Instead, quote, from the government's perspective, nanoforms of silver, iron, or titanium are no different fundamentally from their scaled-up counterparts, which have already been safely tested. So the agency has ushered in the particles into the food supply under the generally recognized as safe provision. And that's the same provision they use on genetically modified foods. And when I looked into this a long time ago, I had also discovered that the research and development that they had done in the department that they put this generally recognized as safe provision for these new technologies in food and pharmaceuticals under was under the veterinary medicine rules. And later on here, and I don't know if we're going to make it there, I have a PowerPoint presentation about nanotechnology in agriculture and food. And it's very interesting because it is published by the Veterinary Association. All right, back to the story. I've been hearing about nanoparticles and food packaging for a while now, and it is expected to reach a $20 billion market by 2020. So there we go, just 2 years from now. And I had no idea that there was a nanocoating in the works for bananas as well. So it's not just going to be pesticides, it's going to be nanocoatings also. And what I was most surprised to learn is just how many food products already contain nanoparticles. Quote, nanoparticles can be used to purify water and as an anti-caking and gelatin-forming agent, and in packaging to protect against UV light, preventing the growth of microbes, or to detect contamination. Titanium dioxide is added to a huge swath of products in its nano form, including paints, paper, plastics, and they also lend a white pigment to most toothpastes and many processed foods, including Mentos, Trident, and Dentine gum, M&M's, Betty Crocker's whipped cream frosting, Jell-O banana cream pudding, vanilla milkshake, Pop-Tarts, and Nestle's original coffee creamer. The aforementioned products were featured in a report in February 2012 in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, which concluded that each of us likely consumes some amount of titanium dioxide nanoparticles each day, and that children under 10 likely consume the greatest amount due to their higher intake of frosted foods, candy, gum, and other sweets. Wow. So it's the children who are being nanoized. And you know, titanium dioxide, if you look, you'll find that in so many different things. And we read a story a while back that it talked about titanium dioxide preventing proper absorption of nutrients in the gut. It was a while back. I don't know. I'll have to see if I can find that story for the notes. Although there is less science focused on ingested nanotech particles than on, say, the ones that are inhaled in industrial environments, it is pointed out that a few studies do exist, including a recent one out of Cornell University that looked at a chicken's... Oh, yeah, this is the one I mentioned the other day. I saw a video that looked at a chicken's ability to absorb iron after eating nanoparticles generally considered safe for human consumption. In it, researchers found that the acute exposure to particles changed the structure of the lining of the chicken's intestinal walls, a change that led scientists to note that serves to underscore how such particles, which have widely been studied and considered safe, cause barely detectable changes that could lead to, for example, an overabsorption of other harmful compounds, unquote. But when it comes to questions about health effects of eating nanoparticles, they quote a guide on the American Society of Safety Engineers website, which reads, quote, nanoparticles may be ingested through drinking water, food additives, atmospheric dust on food, toothpaste, and dental fillings and implants. And ingested nanoparticles can also be absorbed through parers, plaques, or small nodules in the intestinal tissue that are part of the immune defense system. If nanoparticles enter the digestive system and are processed into the bloodstream, they could move throughout the body and cause damage. And like I always say, something like an autoimmune disease? Well, I don't know. But of course, most of this and much of the science that is pointed out is preliminary based on very little hard science. And if that lack of cautionary approach to science is a multi-billion dollar industry sounds familiar, well, it's because it is. The comparison to genetically modified foods is quite unavoidable. In fact, Timothy Duncan, a research chemist from the Food and Drug Administration, admitted as much about the nanotech industry, which is likely has thousands of food and food packaging products in the research and development stage, while writing in the Journal of Nature Nanotechnology last year. He says, quote, "What is holding back the introduction of nanofoods is the hesitation of the food industry, fearing a public backlash along the lines of what happened with genetically modified foods and public fears in some countries about tampering with nature." So considering how little media coverage these larger questions about nanotech and food have received, not to mention the inclusion of the larger food movement laundry list, it looks like the lesson the food industry has learned from GMO is not one about the importance of transparency, but quite the opposite, and that would be secrecy. And as Tom Philpott observed in Grist in 2010, the last time big questions surfaced about nanotech and food in the media was, quote, as GMOs, and the strategy seemed to be release it into the food supply en masse first, and then assess the risk later, or if ever. And that's exactly where we're at. So if you go to your doctor and say, I have autoimmune disease and I'm blaming it on the nanotechnology in my food, they're all going to look at you like you are crazy because there are no studies on it, really. And even if you showed them a study, they're not going to look at it because there is no way for them to measure it. All right, now we're going to fast forward a little bit more toward the present, and this is 2014. So nanotech in our food never ended. It just has moved forward very, very quietly, and every once in a while, some story has popped up in the news that probably went mostly unnoticed. This somebody in chat dropped the other day, and I know I read this one way, way back, so thank you very much, because we can add this to the flow. This is out of popularmechanics.com. Say what you will about Popular Mechanics, but just another good validation that there are a lot of things going on that we have not been aware of. This one is by Christina Oritz, February 19th, 2014, just over 4 years ago, titled, Wait, There's Nanotechnology in My Food? Yes, yes, yes. Think about your last meal, whether it was a big juicy burger or a kale and spinach salad. There is a very good chance that something in that meal was grown or preserved with nanotechnology. For a little more than a decade, the food industry has been using nanotech to change the way we grow and maintain our food. And the grocery store chain called Albertson currently had a list of nanotech-touched foods in its home brands, ranging from cookies to cheese blends. Nanotech used in food has real advantages, says this author. Of course, the official story, the technology gives producers the power to control how food looks, tastes, and even how long it lasts. So if it looks good, is it good for you? Well, most companies use titanium dioxide, and it is used to make foods such as yogurt and coconut flakes look as white as possible and provide opacity to other food colorings and prevent ingredients from caking up. Nanotech isn't just about aesthetics, however. The biggest potential for this method involves improving the nutritional value of foods, whether you like it or not. Nano additives can enhance or prevent the absorption of certain nutrients. And in an email interview with Popular Mechanics, Jonathan Brown, who is a research fellow at the University of Minnesota, says that this method could be used to make mayonnaise less fattening and by replacing fat molecules with water droplets. Nanotech also keeps food fresher over a longer period of time. And Brown says that the nanopackaging industry is actually larger than its nano food counterpart, and it has three main focuses. There'll be as a barrier, as an antimicrobial, and as a sensor. Ideally, packaging would provide protection from moisture, bacteria, and pathogens, and there is a type of packaging that would involve what Brown calls oxygen scavenging, and that was the one that Kodak made, which means that the packaging would absorb oxygen when it reaches food. Other techniques have involved coating packaging with nanosilver to make them antimicrobial, using polypropylene or polyethylene barriers to inhibit moisture, and even embedding packages with silicon-based nanoparticles that can detect pathogens. These are currently being tested, but Brown says that the experimental food packaging has been successful in the lab settings. Even though this seems the best way to ease nanotech into the food industry, concerns do exist. The main concern is that nanomaterials in the packaging could potentially migrate from the package into the food, and some studies have demonstrated that certain nanomaterials are indeed stable, and no migration of nanomaterials was seen. Wink, but it wasn't peer-reviewed, and it was done in our own laboratory with our own oversight with no regulation, so believe it when I tell you. The projections for market use of nanofoods are huge but highly speculative. Some are also really weird. Kraft has shown interest in creating a smart blob, just like Willy Wonka's, that could become any kind of food with any kind of flavor using nanotech. Basically, you put this yummy blob into a microwave, specify what you would like it to be, and the nanoparticles in the food would be activated to the appliance, and then it would change color, shape, and possibly even nutrients. Eventually, the hope is that this food product will become so smart that it would even be able to tell what ingredient one is allergic to and block it before you absorb it. If you want to know which companies are using nanotech in their food and packaging, check out the user-maintained database at the Consumer Products Inventory on the Consumer Products Inventory at the Project on Emerging Nanotech website. It lists more than 1,600 manufacturer-identified nanotech consumer products. Now, hold on one second, because I'm going to take a chance and click on this link and hope it doesn't lock me up. So, all right, there's the inventory, and I need to request an account, so that's not going to happen for this show. All right, last section, regulation required. Well, you would hope so. Aside from requiring manufacturers to provide proof that nanotech foods are safe, the FDA has still yet to implement specific testing of its own. But many countries are researching ways to balance innovation and regulation in this market. In 2012, the European Food Safety Authority released an annual risk assessment outlining how the European Union is addressing the issue of nanotech in food. In Canada, the Food Directorate is taking a case-by-case approach to the safety assessment of food products. And the lack of regulation is a problem for Friends of the Earth, who says that they should be banning nanofoods until at least tests have been done to ensure safety. Even Brown admits that the risk in foods are hard to quantify due to the lack of research. Quote, "We do not know the risks of nanomaterials in foods." Sorry, I needed a drink. "Or how the human reacts to nano additives, or where those nano additives may end up in the environment. We are left with mostly ambiguity, where initial studies indicate some health risks of certain nanomaterials under certain settings, but obviously these don't apply to all nanomaterials, nor do they necessarily reflect the risk of nano foods themselves." So again, shh, don't worry about it. All right, so now one more year into the future. And this seems like quite a coincidence. Google, our friend Google, who is now currently announced that they are working with the Department of Defense to give them some help with artificial intelligence in recognizing, identifying, and looking at behavioral analytics from autonomous drones to determine a target. Yes, that Google. January 31st, 2015, Google Eyes nanoparticle platform as part of the health rethink. Now, you know, Google's Calico Labs, which was called something X or Google X at one time, was working on a big health initiative trying to cure death as a disease. And Kurzweil at that time, as a part of Google, came out speaking about his nanobots in your blood. This is out of phys.org. January 31st, 2015. Google likes taking on big problems, and that is no secret: transportation, communication, and now health. The Atlantic, which is a publication, has posted a video, and it is all about Google's attempt to redefine how we manage our health. Over the last 3 years, Google has quietly built a cutting-edge healthcare facility, and Google's facility employs over 100 doctors and scientists. James Hambelin, who is senior editor at The Atlantic, sat in Google's offices and spoke with Andrew Conrad, head of Google Life Sciences, and Conrad told him that the group is trying to change medicine from being episodic and reactive, like going to the doctor because you don't feel well, to proactive. Google is working on a wristband that can detect cancer cells when they first appear. And that sounds like that sci-fi show Continuum with the Halo armband. And it would be possible for a system where they would be designing tiny magnetic particles to patrol the human body for signs of cancer and diseases. So imagine that you swallow a pill, or maybe you would take a pill once or twice a month, and that pill has small things called nanoparticles in it, decorated on their surface with markers to attach to cancer cells. We have them circulate throughout your body, and we collect them in the vasculature in the arm with a magnet, and you ask them what they saw. In brief, Google is designing a system where tiny magnetic nanoparticles patrol the human body for signs of cancer and other diseases. Yeah, let's hope they're not in your food as part of a nutraceutical. UPI's Brooks Hayes said that the pill would release nanoparticles into a patient's bloodstream, and the magnetized particles would tour the body seeking out cancer cells to bind to. A wearable monitor would then attract and count those particles, pulling information as to what the particles had detected. Cancer cells, for example, would light up, but how does light pass through the skin? Well, infrared lasers can do that, I've been reading. To understand that, Google has started to make synthetic skin, and for their arm model, they had to use materials that behave like skin with a biocomponent of real arms. Also, Google is monitoring 175 healthy volunteers, collecting physiological data frequently, and that would be as, like we've liked to call it, a baseline. So then they can tell when they are monitoring en masse whether or not you are operating within parameters. The goal is to understand what we define as a healthy person, to know what normal is, and that is called a baseline. In the video, Conrad has a memorable reply when his interviewer asks that if some people would feel weird having nanoparticles floating through their bodies as trackers, it is way weirder, says Conrad, to have cancer cells floating through your body that are constantly trying to kill you. In November of 2015, Conrad also talked about Google's health explorations at a live conference. And as a complex system, a reactive, episodic paradigm for a health system makes little sense, says Conrad. Can you imagine changing the oil in your car only when your engine is broken? Well, yeah, that's kind of what we do with healthcare. We wait and we go to the mechanic when we're broken. And he talked about the use of magnetic nanoparticles to monitor for signs of cancer and other diseases. And he said the goal was to functionalize these nanoparticles, which would be the nexus between biology and engineering, making them behave the way that they wanted. The idea, he said, was to swallow a pill or one could call them somewhere and trap them and then ask them what they saw. Imagine you want to explore a Parisian culture and you want to do it by flying a helicopter over Paris once a year. That's what doctors do now. And what we are hoping to do is that these little particles will go out, mingle with the people, and we call them back to one place and then we ask them, what did you see? Did you find cancer? Was there too much sodium? So look out, people. Because nano pills and nano foods, I hate to say it, but they cannot be unrelated. Now, here's something that we're going to look at. This one does not have a date on it, but I just saw it posted somewhere fresh and new, so I'm assuming that it is new. It is out of a website that I've never seen before called CoreSpirit.com. Where science meets esoterica, which I would say nanotech in your body monitoring you is esoterica, at least, if not science fiction. This story is titled How Ingestibles and Nanotechnology Are Changing Medicine. In the 1980s, technology was being used to advance health sciences and provide health professionals with new solutions. Back then, NASA astronauts were giving nanothermometer pills to record their core body temperature when working under extreme temperatures that exist in space. Later, the military got their hands on it and applied similar medical technologies with soldiers. So now we fast forward today to ingestible nanotechnology, and it is quickly expanding its influence into almost all areas of medicine. This type of technology is becoming increasingly more present in the commercial markets, and ingestible computers and sensors have now gone mainstream. Early computers occupied a whole room, and now computers have been made so small that they can mimic a tiny pill and be easily swallowed. A few of these ingestible computers are already on the market, and more are being continuously developed. And progress in the area of ingestible technology makes reliable, real-time measuring of a patient's vital signs without physically attaching a sensor to the body a reality. This can be particularly beneficial in certain clinical settings, like somebody who's in a burn unit and putting something on the skin would be problematic. Vital Sense from Philips is an example of a non-invasive, ingestible sensor that can measure core body temperature over a 24-48-hour period. Designed in capsule form, it travels through the gastrointestinal tract, and it wirelessly measures and transmits data 4 times a minute. The Vital Sense temperature capsule is a part of a telemetric monitoring system that also includes sensors for measuring heart and breathing rates, as well as a patch that measures the patient's dermal temperature. Some ingestible devices have already been used for years and have helped make certain procedures more patient-friendly. For instance, that would be the pill cam. I've always said the pill cam would probably be one of those technologies I might actually try if I had to go for some sort of endoscopic procedure. And that would be an ingestible camera that takes photos of a patient's gastrointestinal tract that replaces invasive endoscopic procedures. And this capsule could provide the physician with a view of the esophagus, the small intestine, the colon, and aids in the detection of small lesions and bleeding. This pill cam is not yet available for commercial distribution in the U.S. However, it has already received its CE mark for usage. Soon it'll be feasible to simultaneously measure and monitor more than one body function. A group at MIT is working on an ingestible that'll be able to measure the temperature and record information from the heart and lungs. This device, currently tested on large animals such as pigs, incorporates a thermometer, a microphone, and a battery. It is expected to be ready for humans and could provide a facile, and they'll be easy, French easy tool for clinical assessments in triage situations. Could you imagine taking a swallowable microphone? What on earth is that? Alexander Swashizin wrote about the potential of gold in oncology treatments in his masterpiece called Cancer Ward. All right, guys, and that is where we're going to leave it for